Hi, and welcome to That's My Purse Pod, the podcast all about King of the Hill. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
So, how was your past weekend or your past week?
I feel like I talked about going to conventions before on the podcast, that I'm a big con goer. This past week, San Diego Comic-Con tickets went on sale. So that was, it's always, for people who have never bought San Diego Comic-Con tickets, it's like a really big convention here. And tickets are, it's a little stressful getting the tickets. It's like you're waiting in a virtual waiting room and then you have 10 minutes to check out. But I was able to secure my tickets, so I'll be off to San Diego next year.
Nice.
I guess that leads me to, so I usually, I make a new costume every now and then, but there's one costume I always go to, and that's Barf from Spaceballs. Spaceballs is one of my favorite movies. So, and Barf, one of my favorite characters, but
I've seen you do that many times.
I think I'm going to retire that costume. I feel like I've been going back to it too often. Maybe it's time to like retire it, but should I wear it to one more San Diego or should I just retire it this year?
I say wear it to one more and then like have that be the going away party or the final party or whatever term you want to use.
I'm also trying to think of, because usually I try to bring a new costume to San Diego, like something new. I wear multiple costumes at that convention. So I'm trying to think of a new costume to wear. So I don't know. What do you think? Any suggestions?
I'd say one new, one old, because you do wear multiple costumes. So like bring the Barf costume for like one day and then bring some new ones, or at least one new one. I mean, it depends on how much you want to pack. If you want to pack like multiple costumes for the days, but at the very least one oldie, one new one.
What character do you think? I mean, I'm having a hard time trying to figure out like a character to do.
I would give it time since you've got until July. That way, like if there's, I don't know, let's say Ant-Man's really good or something like that, then you can like do a recent pop culture icon, I guess you could say.
Oh man, now that you say that, maybe doing MODOK would be fun.
If you could pull it off, it would be great.
Because
I feel like that costume would be difficult.
What if I just made it around my head? And then I wore like a black kind of sheet around my body.
And then you put like doll arms and legs on the on your head or something. That might work.
Oh, man. There's a costume, though, that I've been really wanting to do for the longest time. But I don't know if anyone will get it. It's Sigmund, the sea monster. I don't even know if you know who that is.
I can't think of it, no.
Have you ever heard of H.R. Puffin stuff?
I know of it. I don't know much about it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's this like 70s children's show. And think of like Sesame Street-ish. But I grew up watching Nick at Night. And I remember Nick at Night playing this one time. It was like, oh, we're bringing like all the... The people who created it was Sid and Morty Croft or something like that. And they did a special month where they showed the shows. And I was fascinated with them. So I want to do Sigmund the Sea Monster. But I don't know if anyone will get it.
Yeah, you got to go for it. You never know. Like, I don't know. I mean, I guess you might have a good point there in the sense that, what's it called? It's really dated. And so a lot of people probably won't get it. But at the same time, you never know. I mean, if it's something you really want to do, you never know. It's like when we went as the Nickelodeon games. Granted, I think the people that were there were in the proper age demographic to know exactly what we were doing. But still, it worked.
I will say, though, I don't think I'll ever be in a costume as popular as when we did the Mulan trio.
That's fair. That is very fair. I think... what, we could barely move like 3 feet without somebody stopping us. Oh, move on, my childhood. I want to get a picture.
Yeah, that is true. It was fun, but, you know, not practical to like walk around and explore the convention in.
I liked how we got dinner afterwards, but we went to a place not right off the, it wasn't right off of the, where the convention was. It was like on the other side of San Diego. So nobody was dressed up there. And then, but we were still in full costume when we went in.
I will also say though, it was at the end of like, after the end of the whole day, like a really long day. I feel like I was disheveled. I don't know how you two felt, but I was like, tired. We were wearing like face paint and I felt like that was running. It's just like, you know, I felt like just a long day and we were at then. It was just like unpresentable how I felt, I guess.
Yeah, I gotcha. I think I don't remember the day like perfectly, but if I recall correctly, like towards the end, I definitely was feeling overheated because, you know, you have all the bodies that are there, obviously. So that's kind of generating heat. And then, of course, we're wearing like thick clothing and wigs and makeup and all that stuff. So like by the time everything was over, I was pretty overheated and like, yeah, I'm ready to sleep.
Yeah, I hope you do another Comic-Con, though. Another.
One of these days I might.
I mean, San Francisco's got some. Maybe I'll just come over there. We do one over there.
That's true. I was going to say, I think I missed the boat for 2023 Comic-Con, but maybe a future one.
Oh, I do know. You guys have SF Sketchfest, right?
Yeah, I want to say every January, but I could be wrong. It's either every January or every February.
We should go and dress up as our favorite podcasters.
That would be funny. Like, you know how people go to comic cookbook conventions, dress like your favorite comic book characters. Like you go to, or you go to like a comedy show like Moon Tower in Austin or something, but you go dressed as your favorite comedian.
Yeah. I don't know who my favorite. Oh man. Now I can't remember her name. Who does Serial? Sarah Koenig.
Yeah.
I guess I had to go. Is that, Serial's like, season one is the best. I think that's
like, yeah.
But I don't know. I guess we'll see. But how was your week? What have you been up to?
Not much. Just you know, getting prepped for my trip to visit Austin here shortly. So not too much. Trying not to like, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm trying not to get too busy or have too many loose ends because, you know, once you're gone for a week and a half, I don't want to have to worry about anything. So I've been taking it easy. Hung out with a friend most of yesterday. Got brunch, all that fun stuff. Went to a restaurant that I didn't even realize was a restaurant until somebody pointed out to me. It's because it's called Absinthe. And so when you think of that, you're like, oh, clearly that's a bar because Absinthe is an alcoholic beverage. But no, it's a restaurant. And then I think I realized it was a restaurant a while ago, but I didn't realize that they actually had brunch. I thought it was, just, you know, dinner. So dinner and drinks, that kind of restaurant. But so my friend and I went there and we had a good time. Then we just hung out the rest of the day.
Very nice. I bet there's a lot of bars called Absinthe, though, right? There has to be.
There probably are. Like, this is a popular one here in San Francisco. I'd never been there before, and I went there, and it was pretty good. And they do have a good bar selection, too, for anybody who does want to go and drink. But we did not do that because we were there at brunch. So what is it? Peach Bellinis and
Mimosas
and that kind of thing. Yeah.
There is this place here in Georgetown and they do a mimosa, but they put a popsicle in it, which I thought was fun.
Hey, good way to mix things up. I mean, at some point you have to do something kind of unique or weird or whatever. Otherwise it's like, oh, we're just doing what everybody else on the planet's ever done.
Yeah, and I know some places do, like, mimosa flights. Like, that's a thing, so.
I don't know. Yeah. Some have the bottomless mimosa, which, you know, whatever. I mean, unless you just have a huge gut or whatever, just a huge stomach, usually you're going to tap out at 2 or 3, especially if you're eating.
Oh, man, that makes me think of... Do you watch Bob's Burgers?
No, I do not. The only time I ever watch it is when I'm visiting one of my friends in Portland, because he's a big Bob Burger fan.
Oh, man. There's a episode where they decide to do brunch, and they do bottomless mimosas. And the guy was like, oh, did you say like a one meal minimum for mimosa? Because like tables were ordering one meal to share, and they were just drinking mimosas all day. And then he was like, did you not water down these mimosas? And then they turn back to the restaurant. The restaurant's just full of all these drunk people.
That'll do it. Yeah, there's a few restaurants I know that do the bottomless mimosa. And I think the idea or what they're banking on is that you're not going to succeed or you're going to tap out at like 2 or 3. And then so that way they don't lose that much money.
Yeah, I guess, what is it? Just a bottle of champagne? Man, a bottle of champagne per person? That's kind of...
It's champagne and orange juice combined, yeah. Though I'm sure they don't use, like, top-shelf champagne or whatever for the bottomless. Or maybe they do if you're going to a very high-end place, but generally speaking, I'm guessing they're not using the best of the best.
Oh, man, before we move on, last thing. I've been obsessed with TikTok, and I saw this TikTok where this guy pours... where they pour like bottom shelf liquor through a Brita filter, and then it tastes way better.
Interesting.
And I'm like, I want to try that.
Try that and let me know how it goes. I'm kind of curious what the science behind that. Like, why would it make it taste better? I'm guessing, I don't know much about distilling liquor, but if I were to guess based on my limited knowledge, I'm guessing it gives you that extra filter layer. Cause I think that's what makes like the high end really good. And, you know, people tweet us or whatever if you decide that we're wrong, but I think that's what's supposed to make it good, is like the more you filter it or the more you distill it, the more you get like impurities out and the better the drink is. So maybe that's it. Maybe that's why, if it does work.
Yeah. I might have to try that. I know he watched a TikTok where someone used vodka, and then he did it on his TikTok, and he used, I think it's called Rumple Mint.
Yeah.
It's like a peppermint liqueur. And like, have you ever had that? It's like disgusting. It tastes bad. But he did it, and then he took a shot, and he said it was really good. He was like, game changer. So I'm very curious about
how it works.
About this. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't have a Brita filter, but try it out. Let me know how it works, and then I might follow suit.
I have to get a Brita filter, but I mean, investment, right, guys?
Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's a good way to make cheap liquor taste good, then that might pay for itself after time. Well, that actually kind of sounds like the do-it-yourself type of thing Hank would do, though we never really see Hank drinking liquor all that much. I think a handful of episodes, but that totally seems like a do-it-yourself project that Hank would go for. Let's see. So, on that... segue. My segues are getting better, worse, one of the two. We're going to talk about our episode this time. We're going to be doing Hanky Panky, which is a two-parter with High Anxiety, which will be our next episode. So this one's season 4, episode 13. And it is, well, I mean, as the name suggests, it's very Hank-centric, but it's also really deals a lot with Hank and the Stricklands, notice the plural there, as well as, you know, his job and It's very interesting, and it ends on a cliffhanger. So let's just jump right into it. So we see the Hotel Artlin, you know, which is supposedly the very fancy hotel. We've seen it a few times before in the series. It shows up quite often. It's probably the fanciest hotel in all of Ireland, if not all of Heimlich County. And a fancy dinner is taking place there. It is a propane award dinner. Bobby's like, hey, Dad, should I pretend to do sign language when you are presenting or getting your award? And Hank is like, you know, I'm preparing for my acceptance speech, and the Blue Flame of Valor Award is very important. Don't play around. Give it its respect. Yada, yada, yada. Bobby's While Bobby's getting a lecture, he's kind of doing his own little fake sign language, I guess. Because Bobby just doesn't seem like the type of person who would actually know ASL. Luann is also at the dinner for whatever reason. And I guess, well, actually, you know, that makes sense. Hank would be the type of person to be so proud of the accomplishment, and then Peggy would too, that they'd like bring the whole family over. But Luann's there, and she notices Buck with a much younger looking woman. She's like, oh, Mr. Strickland's wife is gorgeous. And Hank's like, oh, that's not his wife. That's Debbie from work. And then Hank says, pretty girl like that should have been able to get a date, which is kind of funny because it insinuates that either Hank is just in denial or just doesn't know that they are kind of in a adulterous relationship. So the ceremony takes place. MC goes up and he tries to do comedy where he's like, oh, I haven't seen so much chicken in one room since the Democratic National Convention. Absolutely no laughs. Even Bobby comments like, man, nothing. They give the first award of the millennium to Mr. Hank Hill. He goes to give his speech, but he gives a really, really long-winded acceptance speech. You can even tell how everybody's kind of bored or upset or just kind of rolling their eyes too, because he's giving the speech where he's like, you know, when I was young, I wanted to be in the Super Bowl, but then as you all know, I snapped my ankle in the Texas State and my football dreams ended. Well, to, you know, quote Dr. Luther King, I had another dream. You know, he talks about how he worked at Jeans West and then he sold a pair of Jordache to Mr. Strickland, and that opened the door to propane and opened his whole life and his world to propane. And now he does like an acrostic of Strickland where he's trying to explain like, what does Strickland stand for? And, you know, the S is for, the T is for. And as he goes through that, when he's on I, all of a sudden he hears jackass. Hank's like, no, that doesn't even start with the right letter. It's Ms. Liz, which is Mrs. Strickland, Buck's wife. And she's upset because Buck's with Debbie. And, you know, this is kind of the last straw. She's like, I want you out of the house and the guest house. Kicks Buck out. And then she bounces like, oh, I'm sorry, Hank. You can go ahead and continue your speech. And he's thinking, okay, where was I? And then somebody yells out, D for done. I don't know. I mean, I've never cheated before, but I feel like cheating that out in the open is a pretty dangerous thing to do.
It always felt like, I mean, until this episode, that like Buck's wife was kind of it. He never hides it.
Mm-hmm.
I always felt like she was in on like, not that they had an open marriage, but that they had like an open marriage. Because he's so like, not... What is it? Nonchalant is when you're like hiding it, right?
No, nonchalant's when you're just like, you don't care. You're just like, okay, whatever.
So he wasn't chalant. He was nonchalant. Like, just, he's always been out in the open. So it was very strange seeing her kind of like, this was the last straw.
Yeah, that's probably, you know, that might be what it was. Is that, you know, it's all right if it's in private or whatever, but now that he has her out in public at this very fancy dinner, that's just way too much. At Strickland Propane, Hank comes into Buck's office because Buck realizes he is in trouble. He asks Hank to give him all the cash he has in his wallet, and Hank does. And Buck gives him a coaster that essentially says, I give 100% of ownership to Hank. And this is basically his like workaround, like, hey, my wife can't take half of something I don't own. And then after the divorce is final, you can just sell it back to me. And apparently he's going to do this with a lot of different people because he's, you know, he's talking about how he wants to get rid of his sword and his motor and stuff. Hank's like, oh, I didn't realize you owned Sugarfoot's. That place is an institution. It's like a barbecue joint, but it's a lot like, I'm trying to think of a good comparison to what we have in Austin. I guess I'll say Rudy's or something, because they, you know, they put the meat on butcher paper, not on like actual, you know, plates, and then the sawdust on the ground.
Yeah, I would say that's a really good. I feel like it's most barbecue joints here where it's kind of like you go up, you order your meat, and they put it on like a metal tray. Yeah, it's very like family style. Not, I don't know. You, if you've eaten barbecue in Texas, you would know this place.
Yep.
Oh, like Salt Lick.
Yeah, there you go. Salt Lick's awesome. But I think they do actually plate it for you. It's been. Oh man, that's where I want to go. It's been a long time since I've been to Salt Lick.
Oh, we should go to Salt Lick. Now we're making plans during the thing. Exactly. The one in Round Rock is just as good as the one up in Dripping Springs.
All right.
I don't think you missed out on much. But okay, continue.
So we go back to the Hill House, and I guess Peggy's a notary public. I don't think it comes up in other episodes, but she is. And she notarizes the coaster, and she's like, well, since this is a community property state, I'm now part owner of Sugarfoot's. We go back to Strickland Propane, and Buck went ahead, and it appears that Buck probably transferred ownership to Debbie. He doesn't really say directly that he did, but he's essentially saying, like, you know, I'm still in charge, but Debbie's your mother or whatever. So it kind of makes it sound like he might have transferred ownership. As he goes into his office, he sees his wife and her divorce lawyer. And essentially, Buck is now being thrown out of Strickland Propane and thrown out of everything for that matter. But I guess they legally got an injunction or whatever to give Ms. Liz 100% ownership of Strickland Propane. So Buck bounces, but he's like, oh, Debbie, you're my eyes and ears. And Debbie dumbly is like, I'm his eyes and ears, which is probably not the right thing to say to your boss's wife, especially if you're cheating. We return from the break, and Hanks offers to be fired because he basically figures, look, I think you're probably going to want to bring in all your own people, so if you're going to fire me, just go ahead and do it. And Ms. Liz is like, oh, no, I need you. I need you to help me run this, and you know, you're going to be important. And you know, what's the worst job in Strickland Propane? And he's like, the most degrading or the worst paying? Ah, hell, it's the same thing. Tank wipe. And then Miss Liz makes Debbie the tank wipe. At Sugarfoot's, Peggy goes in and she just hates the rustic feel, which tells me she's not a Texan. I mean, we know she's not a Texan. She's from Montana, but she should have lived there long enough to be a Texan, because that's like a legit, that is a legit barbecue place. If you go in and it's all family style and they're serving meat and it's sawdust on the floor and all that stuff, that's real barbecue. I mean, I'm not trying to gatekeep or whatever, but barbecue restaurants shouldn't be fancy. If they're fancy, then it's like they're trying to be barbecue.
Yeah, that's true. Barbecue is like there's no tables, you know. There's very few individual tables. It's all long picnic tables.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of get your food and you sit down and eat. It's like nothing's plated. Like, I mean, when I say plated, I mean like fan, like restaurant style plated. It's kind of all just like, it's like if you went to like a lunch hall and then they like just put all the plate, all the stuff on your one tray, and you went down to set and ate it. Nothing's, you know, sides are usually family style. Like you would order one big side and just pass it around.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, Peggy's always got to throw her own twist on everything.
And that's just how she is. She walks it. She hates it. She sees the sawdust on the ground and, you know, people getting their food on butcher paper and stuff. And she introduces herself to all the staff and announces that she's the new owner. And they're like, oh, what happened to Mr. Buck? And she explains that he's going through a nasty divorce. So he sold it to Hank, which is, you know, her husband. And so that makes her part owner. And he's like, oh, okay, whatever. And he introduces all the staff, which it seems like there's about four different people. And then Peggy's like, well, I want to announce that you are no longer employees. And they kind of stop and stare at her. It's just like, you are teammates on Team Peggy Hill. And they're like, okay, whatever. You know, they're just like, okay, well, we're just here to do our job. So we see Casa Linda, which we see a few times. It's like the singles apartments in King of the Hill. Hank goes in there to find Buck. He goes and knocks on the door of Debbie's apartment, thinking, okay, well, yeah, Buck's with Debbie. And some guy named Gail answers the door. Gail is her roommate, and he's definitely kind of a Bill and Ted stoner type, like he's flighty and all that. Buck is, he's, you know, he's excuse me, when Hank comes in, he notices how close Sugarfoot is to Casa Linda, and he's like, yeah, you know, I like to eat, I like to hump, and so I opened this near, Sugarfoot's near the singles complex. And then he talks about, like, the, what is it, like, three or four things he managed to save from the divorce. He's this Italian shotgun and this saddle and all that stuff. And he's just, he's, like, upset because I don't have anything. And he's trying to Hank's checking up on him and he's not happy. And then, of course, Gail, the roommate, is on eBay. His big thing is that he wants to just buy all these different Hot Wheels. And he asks Buck to borrow $400, which obviously Buck doesn't have at this moment. We go back to Strickland Propane. As Hank shows up, Ms. Liz intercepts him and takes him out to a very fancy restaurant for lunch. And Hank's like, oh, what do I want if none of this looks good? So Miss Liz then just orders for him, and they call her Madam, and she's like, oh, they never called me Madam before. And she really just starts opening up to Hank about everything, and just like, you know, oh, you know, I was able to deal with the drunkenness and the gambling and all, just all these negative things about Mr. Strickland, but it's the women. I couldn't deal with the women. And Hank's like, man, I just, please don't make me choose. Mr. Strickland's been so good to me. And she's like, oh, you deserved better, Hank. And she winds up making him manager of Strickland Propane and gives him a monogrammed cigarette lighter. Really nice one, too. And of course, the promotion comes with a raise. And Hank's like, well, I hope my promotion, Hank's like, I hope my raise doesn't get pushed onto the customer, which is a very Hank Hill thing. So, yeah, I mean, I guess Hank finally made manager under A. Strickland.
I mean, it's like all his dreams are coming true. Not the raise. Well, I guess he would like a raise, but just the managing of Strickland, like, that's something he's really been wanting. So, I mean, it's really good for him. I guess it comes at a cost, though. I'm sure Hank is conflicted about this.
True, because he also, like, he respects Buck. I don't think he doesn't respect Ms. Liz, but, you know, Buck is the person who kind of changed the course of his life from being a salesperson at a jeans store to now, like, dedicating his whole life to propane. So I think he feels he owes it to Buck and whatnot. So he's probably definitely conflicted, like, oh, I'm manager of Strickland, but Strickland no longer belongs to the man I used to know. Back at Sugarfoot's, Peggy's being Peggy. She says she holds a team meeting, and she brings out a suggestion box, and only Peggy has the key. She opens it because, you know, she shakes it and she hears that there's a thing in there, and it's like, oh, let's check it out. She pulls it out and she says, sweep up the sawdust and put in a carpet. So one of the employees speaks up and is like, wouldn't it work better if there was a slot in the suggestion box? And Peggy just kind of ignores it, which is kind of funny because since Peggy is the only one who has a key, and since Peggy's the only one who has a key, and since there's no slot in the suggestion box, it's clear it's like purely just her own ego. But, so she's like, in addition to the anonymous suggestion, what do people think when they walk in here? And the employee is like, oh, I'm hungry. He's like, no. They think, why isn't this good enough to be a chain? My studies have shown that people are willing to sacrifice individuality for comfort. She says, like, I read it in, you know, Dave Thomas's autobiography, founder of Wendy's, and she gives everybody chore envelopes, I guess, to fix everything up. Hank gets called by Ms. Liz to a propane emergency, so he heads over to the Strickland home. She says that there's a leak in a bathroom and it's not hot enough in there yet, and so Hank doesn't really catch on yet. She's in kind of like a bath kimono. Hank goes to the bathroom and he sees the hot tub, and it's set up clearly for like a romantic evening because there's a bottle of champagne and a bunch of candles and it's dimly lit. As Hank starts working for it, she pops the bottle of champagne and she pours two glasses, to which Hank kind of catches on to what's happening. And then he gets uncomfortable. He starts to leave, and then she drops her bathrobe. And now Hank's really uncomfortable because she really wants to, like, make love with Hank. And Hank falls into the tub and gets upset and runs away.
Isn't this interesting? I feel like just thinking about the last episode where no one wanted Hank in the neighborhood. Remember when they're rating, like, sexiness of guys in the block? And now Miss Strickland wants a piece of Hank. How the tables have turned.
Exactly. Although this episode's earlier too, so maybe, I don't know, maybe Hank got less sexy over time. Yeah. That could be our headcanon. After the break, we go back to Strickland Propane, and, you know, she just talks about how embarrassed she is of the night and how unprofessional it was, and she wants to make it up and gives Hank a brand new manager's uniform, but it's, oh gosh, it's clear something's up there because she gives him this uniform that has, like, really short shorts. Not, like, super, you know, super short shorts, but kind of, I guess, like what you see with a UPS store person or something. And keep in mind, he is literally the only person in the office who's wearing shorts. Everybody else is wearing pants or jeans. And so they introduce him as the manager of Strickland Propane. It's kind of funny because we see Debbie in the background polishing a knob on the door. So it's just, it's kind of funny because talking about, I guess, what her job is. But then also, I guess it kind of alludes back to being a tank wipe, and her whole job now is just to wipe stuff down. As Miss Liz leaves, everybody refers to Hank as boy toy and says that, you know, he's essentially Ms. Liz's Debbie now. So, yeah, I guess she really wasn't sorry because she's still kind of forces Hank to wear sexy clothing and stuff and still kind of treats him like a boy toy. And then Hank doesn't want it. I mean, at least, you know, while they were cheating, at least it was consensual with Debbie and stuff. Hank is clearly uncomfortable with all this.
I just wonder, no, I don't know. I guess there's no excuse. I just think about Hank in those shorts. I don't know. I, you know what? A Strickland's a Strickland. No matter if it's the husband or the wife, I feel like they have things in common. And I guess finding love outside of the marriage is one of them.
I guess so. Maybe they learn from each other. We go back to Casa Linda, and Buck is pulling hair out of the drain, and Debbie wants Buck to help her because, you know, Ms. Liz is making her life a living hell. And Buck's like, look, I have no power and there's nothing I can do. You're just going to have to figure something out. And she says, like, oh, well, you know, I'm having to deal with all this craziness while you're living like a king. And he's upset because he's like, oh, I don't remember Louis the 16th having to clean hippie hair out of a bathtub. And he's like, you know what? Give me my sandals. I'm going to go shave in the pool. So interesting situation. We go to the alley and Bill's like, poor Peggy. She doesn't realize what's going on. And Hank's like, nothing's going on with Miss Liz. And Dale's like, hey, you know what? You should just put out to keep your job. And Hank's like, I'm not going to do that. And Dale lights a cigarette as always. And Hank's like, hey, can I get one of those? And he's like, I thought you said they caused death. They do, you know. So Hank's clearly feeling the stress if he needs to smoke. We go to the Get In, Get Out, which, as we mentioned in previous episodes, is like their gas station, their 7-Eleven, Stop and Rob, whatever you want to call it. Hank gets into his truck, and as he's in there, he notices that Debbie is in lingerie in the back seat. She wants Hank to protect her from Miss Liz, and Hank's like, well, of course Miss Liz is upset. You were sleeping with her husband. And she's like, no, I was sleeping with my boss. You're my boss now. And she wants to have an affair with Hank, but Hank, obviously being Hank, has no interest, and he runs out of the truck, runs around it. She runs after him. He runs back into the truck, locks the doors, and she's like, no one rejects Debbie Grun. And he rolls down the window a little bit and says, well, I just did, and then rolls it back up. Hank goes home. It's dark inside. And as he gets in, Buck is sitting in a chair. He turns on a light, and he has his gun with him. And Strickland is upset because he heard about the hot tub incident. And Hank was like, look, sir, I've only ever had one mistress in the past 15 years, and that's propane. My wife and I have an understanding. And then Buck's like, oh, you're right, Hank. I know you don't have sex. And he's like, that's not completely true. And Buck's just like, oh, I had it all. I had a missus and I had money. I was living like a Frenchman, but now I've got nothing. And I miss my wife and my money. Hank kind of picks up on this and he starts scheming. So he goes back to Strickland Propane and he confronts Ms. Liz for lying. And she was like, oh, you know, I really wanted to hurt Buck after he's been, you know, cheating on me all these years. I wanted to be the one to dip him in this dance. And Hank's like, oh, well, he's really dipped. He's broken up over this. And she kind of's like, oh, he is? Oh. And he realizes, oh, well, Buck really wants her back. She really wants him back. So I can make something happen. And Hank invites Ms. Liz to Sugarfoot's at 6 p.m. At the Hill House, Buck is on the phone with Hank, and Hank invites him to Sugarfoot's too, thinking maybe he wouldn't want to eat beefaroni tonight. As Hank hangs up, another call comes through, and Hank answers it, and it's sounds like an old woman. It's like, is Peggy Hill there? And Hank's like, she's not there. Can I take a message? And it's like, this is Debbie, and I'm going to tell her that I'm sleeping with her husband. And Hank's like, what? No, put that old lady back on the phone. Maybe she can put some sense into you. Debbie's like, you know what? I could see Sugarfoot's from here. I'm going to go and tell her. And Hank is trying to buy some time because he needs to find a way to either stop her or explain it to Peggy or something. So he's like, no, don't do that, because if you do, it's going to make things difficult for us. And she's like, so we're going to do. And he's like, yeah, baby, I can't wait to see you. And then as he hangs up, he's like, oh, I just had phone sex. He heads to Sugarfoot's and it's like, oh, where's your mom? And he's like, what happened to this restaurant? Now it's a very fancy restaurant. It even has like this little train that goes around the track with this little Peggy Hill cutout that says no substitutions. Hank asks to see Debbie. Nobody's seen Debbie. Peggy is upset that Hank doesn't care about what happened at work. Why is it that you always talk about your work? Why don't you care about what I'm doing with my job? Buck walks in and he's like, oh, this is prissier than Tony Roma's. And then, of course, Ms. Liz walks in shortly after and she's like, what have they done to this place? They got rid of the horseshoe that we got from our horse, and the walls used to be a smoky color like your eyes. And they kind of fall back in love again. And Buck says, hey, it's over with Debbie. I'm back with you. And then Hank all of a sudden remembers, oh, Debbie, I got to go and stop her. So he bounces out, runs away, and goes to Casa Linda. We see Peggy in the back making her quote-unquote new barbecue sauce, but she's literally pouring like mayonnaise into a bowl of ketchup. So I don't know. She's like, oh, they're going to really love my new barbecue sauce. But all of a sudden you hear what sounds like a gunshot, and she goes out to investigate, and she opens the dumpster, and lo and behold, it's Debbie, and somebody shot and killed Debbie, and the episode ends on this cliffhanger.
There are very few episodes that I remember watching live, because it kind of, you know, now that we have Netflix and Hulu, now that it's on Hulu, it used to be on Netflix, and just rewatching it all the time, I don't always remember watching this live as a kid. But this episode I remember watching because of the, like, Debbie being in the dumps, like, who shot Debbie? Because it was very reminiscent of who shot Mr. Burns.
Yep. Which was also kind of reminiscent of who shot JR from the old Dallas, what's it called? The Dallas, was it a soap opera, TV show? Whatever it was, it's reminiscent of that.
Yeah, so I don't exactly remember where I watched it, but I kind of had the feeling of, like, me being at my old house with my parents and, like, that older TV and just sitting and watching this episode. It probably aired on a Sunday.
Okay.
So watching it Sunday evening.
Yeah, I definitely remember watching it live originally, too. It was one of the few that I think I actually did catch live. Granted, a lot of the newer episodes I wound up catching live, but like the first two seasons, I want to say, I never watched the show in its first run, so I never caught those ones on their first run, but in syndication I did. But yeah, Hank, this was probably one of the few that I actually saw live and got to do the cliffhanger and wait for the next week for the answer and all that fun stuff. But it's funny to see, like, I'm trying to think, the fanciest barbecue restaurant I can think of is like Lambert's in Austin. And even that's not as frou-frou, for lack of a better term, as what Peggy did with Sugarfoot's. Also, she, I guess, used some money or whatnot and commissioned to have like a neon Peggy's created. So they put the Peggy's over Sugarfoot's. So now it's not Sugarfoot's, it's Peggy's Sugarfoot's.
I mean, Peggy moves fast, you know? When Peggy has something up, like when she has a plan, she's like, we got to do this now before people catch on.
It's just funny how egotistical she is on that one. Like, she could have just left it as Sugarfoot's.
True. Wouldn't less people come? Because they wouldn't be like, oh, this isn't Sugarfoot's anymore.
Yeah, like, if they changed the name, I would assume the worst. Maybe not the worst. Like, if I don't know, I'm trying to think of, like, a fancy restaurant. If all of a sudden, like, I'm trying to think of, like, a really good restaurant in Austin that I could think of. If all of a sudden Swift's Attic became, like, John's or Swift's Attic or Mr. Jones's Swift's Attic, I'd be like, something's up. Like, at the very least, that would tell me that they changed owners, and I would start to be very, very iffy about it, because it's like, oh, if I really liked it with this food, or if I really like the food with this owner, I'm probably not going to like it with the new person.
Mm. Yeah, especially with the new barbecue sauce.
Yeah, I don't know what barbecue sauce she's making. And I like how she's acting like, oh, I'm making the secret recipe or whatever. And like literally, unless she's just throwing everybody for a loop, but literally like she's holding the vat of ketchup and pouring it in it's labeled ketchup. And then she's pouring it into like another vat that's labeled mayonnaise. So it's like, oh, she is clearly just mixing the two.
Though I feel like that's how sassy sauce is made at Hop Tani.
I've honestly never made barbecue sauce, so for all I know, that's how you do it. But I'm going to go ahead and say that you don't. I'm sure maybe there's some versions that allow for mayonnaise or ketchup. I'm going to go ahead and guess not. But I don't think... Well, yeah, I guess you do use ketchup as a base in a lot of them, but you also use, like, vinegar and brown sugar or spices and seasoning and stuff. It's just not mayo and barbecue or mayo and ketchup.
Yeah, I actually love making my own barbecue sauce. So I've made a lot of barbecue sauces in my time. And a lot, you do use ketchup just to, like, skip some steps because it is tomato and, like, sugar base. And ketchup is basically like sugar tomato sauce.
Yeah.
So you use that. But, you know, you put other things in it like brown sugar, like you were saying, vinegar, Worcestershire sauce, mustard. You know, there's layering of flavors in there. And I feel like after you did that and you added mayonnaise, like, you know, to make it like a creamy sauce.
Yeah.
But I don't know about... just ketchup and mayonnaise. I'm not a big ketchup eater on its own either. So that would deter me. I would say that would deter me from Peggy's.
Yeah. I feel like... from my understanding, I don't know if they've changed the recipe, but I think isn't that essentially McDonald's secret sauce? Just ketchup and mayonnaise?
I thought it was Thousand Island dressing. I thought that was a secret sauce.
Well, isn't that what secret Thousand Island dressing essentially is? With like obviously some things added, but at the base it's just mustard, or not mustard, mayonnaise and ketchup.
I always thought Thousand Island had anchovy in it for some reason.
I think it does. Like obviously, because it has like those little plant bits or whatever, but... It obviously has more to it than that, but I think at the base, that's all it is.
I've never made it before. I made my own ranch, but I never. Okay, here's a recipe. It's mayonnaise, onion, ketchup, sweet pickle, lemon juice, paprika, and kosher salt. So I guess mostly mayonnaise ketchup.
Yeah, it's essentially mayonnaise and ketchup with some seasoning.
Oh, there is no anchovy in it. What am I thinking? I'm probably thinking of hollandaise sauce. Does hollandaise have anchovy in it?
Mm-hmm. I'm not the big cook like you are, so I have no idea.
Something has anchovy in it.
Yes. I do like how shocked everybody is when they first see it. They even have like a Bobby who's acting as the host or the maitre d' and is seating people and checking the reservation book and all that stuff, where, you know, a real BBQ place, as we mentioned earlier, you go in, you go to the booth, you order your meats, they put it on a plate, and then you walk it back to your table. Of course, you make a stop on the way there to get your silverware, because they don't give you silverware. Well, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But this one, it's like, oh, we're turning it into a sit-down restaurant. I like how Peggy has it in her mind that, like, oh, this is going to be a chain. Like, this is going to be the first of Peggy Sugarfoot's, which also, it's like, I feel like Hank would have filled her in on everything. Like, this is only temporary. Like, as soon as the divorce is settled and stuff, it's going back to Buck. So, I get that she wants to have something that's her own, but she knows, like, that isn't hers. It's going to go back.
Yeah, in Peggy's world, it's hers forever. Like, Peggy's hoping that this will take off so quickly that the chains will just start coming in.
Probably. This sounds like somebody who's never owned a restaurant a day in her life.
It's also Caesar dressing that has anchovies.
There we go.
That's what I was thinking of. So, in case anyone was... I should have left it as a cliffhanger for next week's episode.
You should have.
But, you know, maybe, well... Now, I won't tease you guys this week. Another week I'll tease you. I think we have another two-parter later on.
Yeah, we have at least one more. I think the propane boom one.
Yeah, so maybe that one. That one I'll leave on a cliffhanger.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
I do like when Buck confronts Hank, and Hank's like, I've only ever had one mistress, and that was propane. My wife has an understanding. That in and of itself, that line in and of itself was funny. But then Buck's follow-up of, oh, you're right, Hank. I know you don't have sex. And just how Hank's upset. Like, that's not entirely true. But I kind of get what Buck's saying. Like, Hank's way too uptight and everything, that he's probably not the type to sleep around at all.
I don't even think it's that. I think it's like, not to dive deep into Peggy and Hank's sex life, but I feel like it's very vanilla.
Probably.
I mean, I think that's what... Because, I mean, Buck is going like crazy probably out there. You know, there are stories about Buck's like shenanigans, and we learn about it more in the series, but you know, Hank compared to Buck is like, Buck is Rocky Road and Hank is just vanilla.
Yeah, that's true. Like, everything about Hank is super boring for the most part. He's not a very exciting person, so there's no reason to believe his intimate life is exciting either. I do like, I mean, and I think this is always the case too. Not always the case. This is the case a lot of the time when there's people who split up and they're angry. There's a part of them, it's either that they truly love them, or it's a part of them that is, what's the word I'm looking for? Or maybe it's a part of them that's just like comfortable with the way things used to be and whatever, but they tend to want to get back together. And yeah, it looks like Hank picked up on it that Buck really missed her and wanted to be back with her. And then Ms. Liz was, you know, actually touched when she heard that Buck was missing her. So he tried to reconcile it. But of course, Debbie goes in to throw a wrench in everything. So it looks like, I mean, I guess it makes sense because, what, Debbie's got to be in her early 20s and Buck's an old man. So I doubt there was actual love there. I think she was just trying to get with her boss, if you will, and climb the corporate ladder, get an easy gig going on by sleeping with the boss and now that Hank is technically the boss, she's trying to get Hank to be the new, I guess, protector, essentially, for Ms. Liz so that she could have a better life versus, you know, getting a new job, I guess. I don't know. Maybe because she was just sleeping with Buck, she didn't ever actually have any skills at work, so she could just skate through it. But so if she tried to get a new job, she probably wouldn't have much luck. I don't know. But yeah, and then I don't know. It's just so annoying that she threatens. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what her end game is. She threatens to tell Peggy that she and Hank slept together when they didn't. And granted, yeah, it might make things a little bit crazy if she does say that, because now Hank has to try to, you know, convince her otherwise or whatever. But if her end game was to get Hank to sleep with her or something, like, wouldn't that be even worse? Like, if Hank is the type of person who is that uptight, you think he would be all right with actually going through with it? But, you know, maybe I'm thinking too hard about this.
Well, I think she just wanted things to go back to the way they were, and that Hank is in a power position, like a power position. And then I think Debbie's not that smart, so she just got confused in the middle of it. Like, she started off with a plan, and then she called Hank, and then they start talking, and then Hank takes things ultra, like, he thought there was another, like, he's like, where's the, put the old lady back on the phone.
Yeah, Hank's not that bright either, because he's like, oh, he doesn't, like, it was a bad impression on top of that. And he's still like, oh, let me talk to that old other lady. Maybe she could put some sense into you. And yeah, Hank is, well, Hank, I think Hank's more naive, but Debbie's not just not bright. I'm sure she wasn't. You're right. Maybe I'm just giving her way too much credit. Maybe she hasn't thought through this at all.
Yeah, I think she just got confused in the phone call. Like, she had a plan, and then she was like, Hank threw her off with his, like, thinking there's two people, and then she's like, well, I'll just do this now.
Yeah, maybe. But unfortunately, she's dead now, and now we got to figure out who killed her. So unless you have anything else to this episode, maybe we should let everybody watch for the next episode, and we can talk about how everything happened.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. Well, next episode, we're doing the second part, which is High Anxiety, which will be season 4, episode 14. And we will wrap up this two-parter. Until then, I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
Bye.
Bye.